We done?
No. Who's?
I can't hear anybody.
Okay, we're talking now.
Can anybody hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Did people hear me?
Yes, whoever you are, we can.
Oh, must have hit wrong button.
Okay, I'm gonna.
There you go. Yay.
Okay. So the title of my talk that you might have seen is Fear and Loathing, Elections and Zazen. You might have recognized the title from a phrase from Hunter S. Thompson, who was the self-proclaimed gonzo journalist from the 1960s and 70s. And he wrote about the 1972 Nixon campaign in his book entitled Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail. So on this day before election 2020, we have our own version of fear and loathing to deal with, I think. We just concluded 30 minutes of Zazen. Although unlike traditional Zazen, I invite you to go a bit deeper and try to notice your own version of what fear and loathing it might be stored in your bodies. I want to give you some background before we examine our experiences. If you're anything like me, the last weeks and really months and years have not been so calm and not been so rested. Some of the feelings I've experienced are jumpiness, skittishness, worry, anticipation, wanting tomorrow, but not wanting tomorrow, doubting, sarcasm, hurt, pain, physical pain, anger, add anything else that I might've missed on the list. Yet as much as we have had these feelings, I know that very few of them are what I would call firsthand feelings, feelings and reactions that arise from a specific event right now. So if my computer were to fall off my table and onto my toe, the pain would be firsthand and you would hear it from me right away. And likely the same exact event would create secondhand feelings as I berate myself for stupidly not paying attention to where the computer was perilously situated. Firsthand is the immediate reaction. Secondhand are the stories that our mind make up about how and why we are feeling and what we are feeling. So blame and shame, for example, are always secondhand feelings. Our mind loves to attach to stories. The neural pathways that sense experience are different from those that process information. As they are processed, they become stories, and the immediacy of the present disappears as they become timeless. For that reason, these secondhand versions of what we think we are feeling are embellished over time and stick around longer. So a lot of times present experience and story making often happen simultaneously. To become aware of my experiences, one of my teachers once asked me to log good and bad feelings as they arose and take notes of them, including what stories were attached to these feelings. And he asked me to do this for a week. On the fourth day, I was kind of accustomed to doing this. I was figure skating and I fell. And I was, so with this practice of noting my feelings, I was able to actually watch myself as I fell. And physically, I tripped on my toe pick and really kind of bent on my leg and hurt myself. But the amazing part for me that day was that in the few seconds it took from me to be upright and then to be splattered on the ice, I was able to watch my mind make up a story. And the story I made up was that I fell, I twisted my ankle, I couldn't skate for months, then gained 20 pounds during the time I was off ice, and I was never able to skate as well again. All of that, I imagined that in full color and details in seconds, probably even nanoseconds before I hit the ice. When I landed on the ice, I started laughing because it was ridiculous. Like, I made up this whole story before I even felt what happened to me. Like, I was just imagining how I was going to feel. And I just burst out laughing, and all my friends came rushing over. They thought I had a concussion because I was laughing so hard. And I said, no, it's actually okay. I got up, I took a short break, and in another minute or two, I was back on the ice. My leg was perfectly fine. So I had made up this whole story about how I was going to be suffering for potentially years from this, and there was nothing. So if I was in a Zen koan, that would have been my moment of enlightenment. But beyond first and secondhand feelings, there's a third, even deeper layer, trauma. And trauma is the painful, uncompleted story that we hold on to and keep stored in our body. Trauma is created by events that we can't fathom and from which we have not healed. Trauma comes from situations beyond our control, whether they be random, unusual events, a tree limb falling on us, or events that we are powerless to control, abuse, poverty, racism, homophobia, disease, violence, loss and grief, war, horrors that were foisted on us. Powerlessness is the key to understanding why trauma exists in each of us. Even though the particular causes and conditions are usually different, our inability to control these circumstances and prevent harm from happening to us cause our body to try to wall off what just happened. And despite the lasting and negative energy of trauma, I believe it is a bodily reaction that is attempting to provide the space to physically heal, to forget the pain, or an attempt to move on with our lives. So trauma has a purpose in our body. But trauma freezes this story, whatever happened, and it freezes our mind into believing that the exact same past is about to repeat itself. And while the story yearns to be released, our body and mind keep it caged in with another story that the trauma is too painful to experience and to look at. And despite even that, the body keeps on sending out these signals saying the story's still there, whether it's through disconnected feelings, exaggerated reactions to different types of events, or by re-triggering. So going back to the election for a second, the polls say that Biden is ahead, and according to 538.com, this lead has been maintained for months now in key states. Now, despite the factual statement I just made, I bet already many of you just thought the polls looked good last time. For many, this story of the polls, the disappointment of the last presidential election, is now tucked away in our bodies and minds. No matter what the causes and conditions of today are, they are not the causes and conditions of 2016. Many of us, though, are stuck in 2016, unable to see the present today. Stuckness is a symptom of trauma. If we can recognize the stuckness or blocks in our energy, we can affirm we are dealing with a traumatic reaction. Even if the story trapped in our bodies is not about the last election, enough has happened in our country in the last 4 years to initiate other traumas: racism, anti-LGBTQ policies, maltreatment of immigrants, fires, hurricanes, other adverse climate events, white nationalism, gun violence, unemployment, disregard for human life, and pandemic all have the potential for scarring us. And once we add in any personal traumas, deaths of people we love, relationships that have withered away, lost jobs, difficult workplaces, health issues and injuries, it's honestly a wonder that we are still standing upright. In addition to stuckness, another outward symptom of trauma is the way it affects how we view or express our world. Many of us seem perfectly fine with all these traumas, but when we talk about the last 4 years, sarcasm, defeatism, powerlessness, and Hunter Thompson's word, loathing, reigns supreme. For half my life, my go-to habit of dealing with the difficult, the unponderables, and trauma was sarcasm. I tried to pretend that nothing could harm me because I had already anticipated all the bad things that could happen to me, or I was too hardened to be affected by them. Sarcasm was an attempt to prevent myself from feeling the pain and face the hurt when I did not have the emotional experience to more directly face it. My healing and loss of sarcasm for me started after I came out. As I started to feel and express feelings, real feelings, I was able to examine the trauma that many queer people carry with them. Trauma that comes from having the innermost desires and experiences crushed and denied by families, friends, and our society. Our minds deal with these body blows in many different ways. We can try to ignore them. We can try to insulate ourselves from them. We can collapse into them, and we can give up. None of these reactions are healthy. We know that Zazen and meditation can help us get into our bodies. The Zen teacher Thich Nhat Hanh talks about two aspects of meditation, Vipassana and Shamatha. Vipassana is going deeper for insight. I think we're familiar with that. The second aspect, Shamatha, is stopping. Hanh calls Shamatha fundamental. If we can't stop, we can't have insight. We need to stop our thinking, our habit energies, our forgetfulness. Through mindfulness, we're able to stop the forward-leaning motion and pay attention to the now and to become calm. Our question then is, how do we stop and become calm? Calm can't be willed very well, and true calmness can't be created when trauma and fear is active. Calm cannot necessarily be gained through metta and positive thinking. I understand that this last statement may be very controversial, so let me go a little bit deeper into Thich Nhat Hanh's discourse to explain. He talks about the five stages of calming in his book, The Heart of Buddhist Teaching, which is a great book that covers everything. Like, it's an amazing book that he wrote years ago. So the five stages are the first stage, and you will recognize what we did in our meditation today. The first stage is recognition. What is this powerful emotion I'm experiencing? Can I name it while it's occurring? If so, that's recognition. Even though I might react out of anger, most of the time I don't know I'm angry until I hear something come out of my mouth that's inappropriate or hurtful. We can do a body scan to find the part of our body that seems to attract or block more energy. However, when trauma is causing the blockage, it often is hard to feel emotions. Trauma is surrounded by a dense fog of confusion and pent-up energy. And since it's repelling the most casual inquiry in a protective mechanism to prevent us from re-feeling the fear and deep emotions, we often come away saying that we can't feel anything. I've spent years in that state. The second stage is acceptance. In this stage, we can be accessed through mindfulness training. We accept what is present. Oh, I'm tired, I'm angry, I'm sad. We learn to accept what is there at the moment. However, it's harder to accept trauma or the energy around trauma, since we are loath to want to touch it or visit it. And by its nature, trauma is unacceptable and hidden away. Part of its story is that we cannot accept the trauma because what has happened in its nature is unacceptable in our world. The third stage is something I try to help us experience today, embracing. Thich Nhat Hanh suggests that we embrace powerful negative emotions such as anger as an adult would embrace a crying child. I love this really beautiful metaphor. With mindfulness, we can feel and be fully aware of the feelings. In a baby, these feelings are expressed not only in its cries, but in the contortions of its face and entire body. Despite the intensity, we know by embracing the baby, the child's feelings will loosen up and dissipate. Yet, can we embrace the fullness of hard emotions within us? I ask you to try to imagine yourself surrounding your arms around trauma, letting it be what it is without trying to change it. The fourth stage, looking deeply. As we embrace emotion with mindfulness and calm, we can look at what are the causes and conditions of this emotion. With our screaming baby, we may realize that they're hungry or they have a full diaper. At this stage, if you're dealing with trauma, in our guided meditation, I invited you to go deeper into the trauma to find the story that was there. The story that you might find is not necessarily what caused the trauma, what originally happened. It's what the story is now, because the story changes. The original event causing trauma has morphed into something else completely different, added to over years and years of other events. By looking deeply, you can see what that might be right now. And then the final step is insight. To react to what you found and determine what you can do differently. Can you mitigate the anger or hate? What conditions do you need to do that? We can change the diaper or feed the baby or just rock the child and give comfort to them. With trauma, insight allows us to change the story we have within us to create the new story of how we overcame the trauma and how we healed ourselves. Thich Nhat Hanh instructs us that the final aspect of shamatha is rest. Meditation is rest. Calm purposefulness is rest. Time allows us to rest. If you have a pet, you might have noticed that when they're injured, their reaction is to lie down and rest. They may forego eating for some period of time as their body heals.
We need to allow ourselves the time to heal, whether it's minutes or, if we're visiting trauma, it may be years. Stopping, calming, resting are the preconditions, he tells us. So how do we do this in practice? A month ago, Diagon Gaithier shared with us his techniques for going into the body as Zazen. Today, I walked you through a somatic technique that my teacher, Kiku Christina Lenthaers, taught me. This guided meditation allowed us to approach those areas of our body that we noticed are hurting or blocking energy with the third, fourth, and fifth steps of embracing, looking deeply, and hopefully leading to insight. And I'm going to share a little story of my own experience. Recently, I was feeling very overwhelmed by negative emotions, and I felt sadness. There wasn't anything specific I could feel. And in my morning sitting, I found this spot right in the center of my chest. And I found this spot basically because anytime there's negative emotion, that's where it tends to go in me. And I knew I had some sadness. I knew where it was. I recognized it was sadness. I recognized where it was in the body. And so I had to prepare myself. And so I gave you one way to prepare yourself, which is to have something beautiful that you can bring to that so you can hold on to that. The other one that this is all my imagination, but I imagine that actually I have a belay rope like mountain climbers and rock climbers have. And so if I'm descending into a particularly fearful place in my body, I know that that belay rope will whoosh me out if I need be. And so I imagined myself being lowered into this part of my body where I felt the blockage. And as I landed, I was standing outside a thick fog bank. That's what I could see. And so I just watched the mist shifting. And I did what I told you. I imagined my arms stretching and just holding this whole fog bank. And I tried to feel the emotions that were there, including the sadness and some of the fear and anger that I was feeling. And again, if it was getting too much, I could go back to remembering the picture of my room that I particularly really love and kind of bring that to our experience. On this particular occasion, as I experienced the pain and sadness that were emerging, I felt secure enough to walk around into the midst. So I invited you at one point to step forward into that place. A wise person once told me that curiosity is the opposite of fear. So even as I felt fear, I tried to think of it as curious. What was this thing that was causing such deep emotions in me? As I walked in the midst, I recognized my pediatrician's office, the fish tank, the stack of Highlights magazines, the cat clock on the wall with a tail that switched back and forth. As a young child, I used to see this doctor every 2 weeks for allergy shots for asthma up until age 15. As I walked around the office in my body that I saw this photograph above the receptionist's desk. And it's a photograph of a small forlorn puppy with a big thick hemp rope around its neck. It's tied loosely, so it's not choking, but just around its neck. And I remember how as a child, I was attracted to this photo. And as an adult, I realized that my child, Alan, saw himself as this sad puppy tied down, unable to be himself, unable to run free. Memories of that feeling, not being who I was, rose up into me at that moment. As a child, I never felt I fit in and I experienced the world differently than other people. I often felt alone. Years later, after I came out, I would realize that this feeling of difference was my sexual orientation. And while I pondered this particular sad puppy that came back in this picture, I was struck that my pediatrician would have had, that's an unusual picture for a pediatrician to have in her office. She had all these other bright little kid stuff, and then she had this puppy strangled, you know, for me. And the reality was that she was a lesbian, and this was 19 in the 60s, so she's practicing in the 50s and 60s. She was a lesbian. As a child, I just knew that she was unmarried, and it was later that I figured out who she was. And then I wondered, was she feeling the same? Was this picture meaningful to her in the same way it was meaning to me? curiosity allowed me to experience a scene without trying to make any sense of it really, and to go into this fear and sadness. And by time I did this stuff, I noticed that the heaviness I'd felt earlier had lifted. I understood that I didn't really need to hold on to the story any longer. And really the only reason I'm telling you the story is because I needed a story to tell for this thing. But otherwise I would have forgotten this already. It wasn't so important that I hold on to it once it happens, once you experience your body, let go of it. And if it comes back to you and you think about it, that's okay. But if it doesn't come back, you've done your work. You don't need to think about these things to hold on to it. And so sometimes we want to keep attached to our traumatic stories. And when we do, that tells me our insight hasn't fully bloomed. Other times like this one, like in a dream, we experience our bodies and let it go. And as I said earlier, this particular part of my chest is often the place where I feel blockage and shortness of breath. And whether it came from my childhood asthma or my childhood asthma came from causes and conditions in my family, you know, I don't know. I can tell you that over time and practice Zazen and practice with going into my body, the tension and the blockness and the block of energy has lessened over the years. So as Daigon and others have reminded us, first and foremost, Zazen is a body practice. So we're not trying to resolve things psychologically, although that may happen, but we are trying to heal ourselves somatically and energetically. Coming back today, the day before Election Day, I'm suggesting that each of us visit what we are carrying with us right now. Is what perceived as fear and loathing about the state of the country, or are those conditions in our body that are already there? While I do believe our individual and collective mental state defines what is happening right now in our society, I also believe that looking into our traumas, we can create a path to feel more authentically right now. By recognizing our traumas, we begin to separate those feelings from the events taking place right now. When I cannot do that, my original traumas are triggered. I will tend to turn to loathing, passivity, and anger in dealing with current problems because of the deepness of those traumas. However, when I can recognize that that new emotions arise all the time from new events, those offer different opportunities for movement and change. My fear for queer rights may be eroded under this current administration can be channeled when I'm not being re-triggered. It can be channeled into action rather than dwelling in traumatic unchangeability and defeat. So with your next breath, feel what is in this moment. Feel your humanity, your power, and your energy. Then take another breath and another. We're practicing the way of stopping, insight, and healing. There's nothing else that we need to do. So thank you, everyone.
Alan, thank you. Let's sit together for a minute or two, and then we'll close with a little metta. Okay, so let's sit.